Greetings to you all from North Lee United Church, where my parish is now being inspired by the eloquent words of Ambry Stewart. So thank you for sharing him with us. It's my delight to be back here with you all again. It's been a while. I think of you often and warmly. You're in my memories and you are treasures there. So because I treasure you so much, I'm not going to bore you with a big, long theological sermon. I'm going to share you a story. So I invite you to get comfortable in your seats, sit back, and imagine yourselves in a warm, comfy chair as I share these words. And as I speak, may the Spirit be upon these words and in all our hearts. Amen. So Brad and Joanne were hosting a dinner party. Their guests included a few friends from the neighborhood, Simon and Jane, Edward and Anna, Pete and Lucy, and their brand new neighbors, John and Sadiq, who recently moved in next door. The dinner was wonderful. The dessert plates were emptied. There were happy faces all around the table as they lingered, chatting about this and that. "Uh-oh," said Simon, "looks like we're down to the last few drops." The room fell silent, watching as he emptied the bottle into his glass. Everyone around the table quietly considered what this meant. Had they really drank all the wine? Would that mean the party is over? Joanne, their host, suddenly felt a sting of embarrassment, having fallen short on delivering adequate spirits. There was no more wine to offer them. "Shall I make a pot of coffee?" she offered, and before getting a response, she bounded into the kitchen to prepare a pot. "I have tea as well," she shouted into the dining room, "if you prefer." Each guest called out their preference. Then Pete said, "Too bad we couldn't turn water into wine." They all laughed. "Indeed, wouldn't that be grand?" Jane said, and they all agreed. "Where's Jesus when you need him?" Pete said. "Did you know that the wedding at Cana was Jesus' first miracle?" said John, the new neighbor. John and his husband, Sadiq, had just moved into the neighborhood a few months before. This was their first dinner party with their neighbors and their neighbors' friends. Lucy jumped right in. "I think I read somewhere that if you put water into an old wine barrel, it will turn the water into wine. But that's not much of a miracle." "Yes," said Edward, "but according to the story, they were water containers used for rituals, not wine barrels. So that theory doesn't really work." Edward was an engineer, a longtime friend of Joanne and Brad's. Sadiq quickly agreed with Edward, hoping to lighten the conversation up, and Jesus would never serve watered-down wine. "The Jesus I know serves wine that's good wine." They all laughed, except Brad, who was stewing a little over the whole miracles thing. He said, "You know, I really think it's the miracle stories that make it hard to believe in Jesus. I like him better as just an ordinary guy, a teacher maybe. But as soon as you start calling him the Son of God and talking about miracles, well, frankly, you just lose me there." Joanne's cheeks flushed. Not only did they run out of wine, but now her husband was going to insult the new neighbors who hadn't yet become familiar with his honest and unfiltered viewpoints. She laughed awkwardly. "To each his own, dear." Then John said, "It's interesting that so many people know of the story, but know so little about the story. It's really quite interesting." He didn't directly address Brad's comment, but he wasn't happy to end it there. He went on. "Jesus initially didn't want to help the stewards at the wedding party. It was his mother that encouraged him, or rather insisted that he help. It would have caused the family tremendous shame and embarrassment to run out of wine at a wedding. It was common for the whole village to attend the festivities. What's interesting is that Jesus was initially reluctant to demonstrate his power. Simon weighed in with what seemed evidence to support the theory. Doesn't that prove Brad's point that Jesus was just a man, not a god? Well, maybe the story isn't literally true. Edward's wife, Anna, was an English teacher, and she jumped in. You know, myths and legends have truths embedded in them that transcend literal facts. No one can know exactly what happened, how it happened, or even if it happened, but the story may contain an essential truth or wisdom, nevertheless. The room fell silent as everyone pondered her words. Anna was one of those people who rarely spoke, but when she did, it was usually quite clever. John broke the silence. Well, the truth is, Jesus couldn't have turned the water into wine without the power given by his Father. He couldn't have done it without God. Joanne felt her stomach lurch as she anticipated her husband's next words. She couldn't leave the room now. There was nothing more to serve her company, so she sat, frozen in her seat. Then, sure enough, Brad spoke. Well, that's where you lose me. Back to the God stuff. You'll be hard-pressed to convince me of any of that. The tension in the room thickened. It was Sadiq who made the next worthy attempt to redirect. You know, Anna had a helpful point, and I think that what we might consider is the unexpected grace that this story points to. Jesus didn't have to rescue the wedding. He could have said no to his mother and to the stewards, but he didn't. In the midst of their effort to celebrate with their village, the crisis would have brought shame and a bad start to their new life together. But Jesus showed them compassion, despite the fact, as he said, it wasn't his concern. Brad appeared to be considering, as Sadiq had asked him to, but with a definite scowl on his face. John then turned to his husband Sadiq and whispered in his ear. He then got up and left the room. They heard the front door shut. Joanne felt herself implode with shame. Brad had completely offended John, she thought. And as if he could read her mind, Sadiq said, "Don't worry, Joanne. John will be right back. He's just gone to let the dog out for a few minutes." Brad was still scowling, and the rest of the guests were feeling the chill in the air. "I guess it's true that talking about religion or politics can be dangerous," said Edward, who had managed to turn his napkin into a box. Everyone gave a polite laugh except Brad, who still sat quietly contemplating with furrowed brow, thumbing the stem of his empty wine glass. John did return and brought the fresh smell of the night air with him. "Buddy's good for the night now, I expect. Now, where were we?" "I think we've not only exhausted the wine, but we're at a stalemate with the story," said Jane. "Although I have to admit, I've learned more about it than I thought I'd ever care to know." "And yet," John said, rubbing his hands together enthusiastically, "I haven't mentioned the symbolism of the wine." It was Brad, their seemingly irritated host, who got up from the table then. Without a word, he left the room. Joanne felt her throat dry up as her husband walked out, convinced that the evening had finally come to a disastrous end. She wondered how she would be able to face her new neighbors again, knowing that they'd likely think of her and Brad as terrible hosts. And the rest of her guests would likely never forget the whole debacle either. She'd never live it down. As she was picturing herself saying apologetic goodbyes to her guests, Brad returned to the kitchen with a dark purple bottle in his hand. He said, "As it turns out, this year is Joanne and my 25th wedding anniversary, and I've been saving this bottle for the occasion." Joanne's jaw dropped as he continued. "You probably can tell I'm not a religious man. I think of myself more as sensible and reasonable. I don't agree with some of what you're saying, but I don't have to, and you don't have to agree with me either. The fact is, we live in a free country, and we're all good people. we're probably all right, and we're probably all wrong, because there's as many ways to look at things in the world as there are people in it. And life's too short, frankly. So, all that aside, he said, it's time for us to show a warm welcome to our neighbors, and we can't do that without a toast. Joanne, grab me a corkscrew. Let's open this beauty up and celebrate. The room burst into applause. Joanne fell in love with her husband all over again. There were smiles all around as they readied their glasses, eager to receive Brad's vintage anniversary wine. He filled their glasses and raised a toast to new friends, new stories, and to the gift of life itself. Cheers, he said. Then he sniffed his wine, tasted it, and nodded. Now that's the good wine. The end. Now, I don't suppose any of us imagined that Brad would be the one to offer up unexpected grace to the dinner party. He wasn't much of a believer. But what if belief is not the means to grace? What if grace comes through humility, open-mindedness, an open heart? Grace is a way of being and doing that enables connection through compassion, kindness, forgiveness, generosity of spirit, and ultimately, love. Today, as we come to receive the gifts of Christ's loving sacrifice for us at this table, may we let go of our righteous convictions and beliefs. May we surrender our fears and our doubts. May we simply soften our hearts and open our minds to the healing, transformative, and welcoming power of unconditional grace with love. Amen. Thanks be to God.